he is doing an experiment this year with Chicago Hardy figs in which he's planting them at an angle.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. It's Eclectic DIY with me, Eric, and my friends. Today we've got Aaron on the show from The Impatient Gardener. And did you just hit like 200,000 subs or something, Aaron, on YouTube?
No. Nothing close. No, nothing close to that. It's been a bit of a slow crawl here for a little bit. No, I'm nowhere near that, but I'm happy for the people who do follow me.
Aren't you at 135 or something then?
No, like, I think it's I'm just hovering near 120.
Well, that's great.
But it, I mean, yeah, trust me, I'm very appreciative of that, and it still blows my mind, honestly. You know, I always judge everything in terms of like the population of the town I grew up in. So when my channel hit 10,000, I was like, oh my gosh, that is like if every person in the town I grew up in listened or, you know, had subscribed, and now we're 10 times that. So it's, or 12 times that. Not good at math. So anyway, no, it's exciting. I'm happy for it. And I do try not to look at that number too often, though, because as you well know, YouTube is fickle. And yeah, if you look too much at those numbers, you often end up feeling worse about things and you feel better about things.
Yeah, I don't look at the numbers anymore. I just put out videos I like.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor, Muhammad, up the block, I mean, I know him. I don't know him really well, but he goes, hey, Eric, I like that bee video. And I'm like, oh, he watches the show.
There you go.
I didn't know he did.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about kind of a garden year, the year, the season, the growing season recap of what went wrong and right in our gardens and stuff.
That sounds like fun. And I can't believe we're already at the point in the season where it's time to talk about that, to be honest, because summer goes quick and this year seemed to go very quick.
Supposedly, as you get older, the years go faster.
I seem to think that's true. Seems to be the case for me. I don't know about you, but that's how it's working on my end.
I think my biggest success has been the fig trees I have, and particularly the Chicago Hardy, which looks like a giant 8-foot-high thing. After 2 years.
And how many figs? Did you get figs?
Yeah, we get figs every day from it. We're still pulling figs off now.
That's fabulous. Yeah. Well, you've talked before about how there are some fig trees there. And actually, you had your fig experiment. You shared that in the in your Patreon account and stuff. Some of those figs that what your neighbor was growing or something. Anyway,
yeah, I made a video. I haven't posted it yet, of course.
Takes a while to get there. No, I mean, you're clearly in a climate that there is a special little fig thing happening there. I feel like I'm, you know, constantly working against nature a little bit when I try to produce figs. But by the same token, I wouldn't say that I treat my figs particularly well. They're, it's like a lot of other plants in my garden. It's live or don't.
So do you bring them into the garage or you leave them outside?
No, they would definitely die if I left them outside. I bring them in. I let them go basically dormant outside. And then I put them in a cold and dark corner of the basement. So I have our little well pump room in the corner of our basement is very cold because it's actually underneath the deck and extends out from the exterior of the house. So I have made that room into the place where I store anything that needs to be cold and dark storage, basically kept into dormancy. So the figs go in there. That's where I put my dahlia tubers. That's where I put my my giant red banana. Those things all go. The room is quite crowded in winter. We always hope that we don't actually have a problem that we need to get in there because it's very difficult to access because I just jam plants in there. And then actually last year or 2 years ago, we made a little door for it out of like foam board insulation.
Yep.
So that I can close, and it's a two-part door. It's kind of like a Dutch door made out of foam board insulation, so that I can close or open that to kind of control the temperature in there. And then I put a little Bluetooth thermometer in there,
oh,
which really helps me, because sometimes if it's we're in the middle of a cold spell or something, it could freeze in there. So I do have to open something up in there. But also those doors help keep it dark in there, because there are lights down in the basement on an occasion.
My dahlias were kind of underwhelming this year. How were yours?
Pretty good. Not as good as some years I've had. I blame that on drought, second year in a row with drought.
Yep.
And not all my dahlias are on, I guess a small portion of them are on a drip irrigation system. The rest are sort of left to manage themselves. But I think even more than that, I am starting to see the longer term effects of having Asian jumping worms. These are these invasive earthworms,
yeah,
in my garden. And the soil in those areas, I think it's just really tough for the dahlias. And I have not adjusted what I do to them. I haven't really started fertilizing them any more than I did or doing anything different than I was doing. So I'll probably have to make adjustments in future years as I sort of, you know, people work through how we're going to deal with these invasive jumping worm problems.
We have the Asian tiger mosquito here in New York. In the city.
What is that? That sounds scary.
It's a mosquito that came over from Asia, probably, you know, in a crate or something. And I don't know where else it is in the country, but here they're smaller and quieter than regular mosquitoes. And when they land on you, you can't feel it. And this year they blew up in our neighborhood here. And I, you know, there's, you know, you have those people that all the mosquitoes go right for them, and other people, they don't get them. Usually I don't get any mosquito bites, and I'm getting mosquito bites from this kind of mosquito now in the backyard.
That sounds terrible.
I do have this.
So you guys had a lot of rain this year, right?
Oh yeah. It's been like 3-inch dumping rains.
Yeah. So that's undoubtedly that's helping your mosquito population there, I guess.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure some of my neighbors do not clean up their backyards, and there's just, you know, a bucket with water in it or a tub or something.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any standing water. I have another neighbor that bought this mosquito trap that emits a very fine amount of carbon dioxide all the time. And it draws a mosquito in to, like, there's a fan there that sucks them into this bag. And the bag, there's a fan there, and it dehydrates the mosquitoes so they die.
Oh, that's cool.
And he swears by it. He's got like a CO2, if you have a, not like a restaurant size gas container of CO2, but like a 3-foot high tank of it.
He buys one
a year, and it's like $50 or something. But to him, it's worth it so they can be in the backyard.
Oh, cool.
Actually, it's the chicken lady's husband who set this up. Who I need to have her back on the show because people are wanting to talk about chickens again. But yeah, with the rain on the East Coast has been a new normal, unfortunately, as we could see from last Friday where New York City flooded.
Right.
I was stuck in Grand Central for hours. But anyway, and my garlic was really underwhelming because I planted it too late in the fall. I got it in after a frost, and that really, really had a bad effect on it. It just didn't have enough time to set roots.
I had the best garlic harvest I've ever had.
Wow.
I only grew one variety this year, which was Music. And I bought it from a different source than I bought from in the past. I bought from Keen Garlic, which is actually, apparently they're in Wisconsin. I don't know why I haven't been buying them for a while, but when you order from them, you can order different sizes of cloves. And I went for either like the biggest size or the second biggest size that they had. Cause I'm like, You know what? Let's just get some decent garlic going here. And, I planted that and a couple of things I actually fertilized, which I've been, you know, I'm an under fertilizer.
Yep.
So I fertilized, and then I also fertilized again in spring when things started growing again. So undoubtedly that made a huge difference. But I like the Music type because it tends to make very big cloves and not a lot per bulb. So there's usually like 4 or 5 per bulb. Some of them are huge. So it was the best. It was, and they're really tasty. I like that one a lot. So anyways, it was my best year ever for garlic. I was pretty excited about it.
Garlic is a huge nitrogen feeder. And if you don't fertilize, yeah, they will not grow. It's hard because since I did my soil testing inspired by you, I've become much more mindful about whether I throw down some fertilizer or not. So I've really dialed it back because I'm kind of spontaneous. I'm like, oh, I'll just throw some on there, you know. And
yeah.
But so fertilizing in the fall, so you seeded, you put the garlic in the fall, and then you also laid down like a time-release fertilizer?
Yep, exactly.
And then in the spring, you did the same thing, the time-release?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And I had really good, I also grew some onions, not enough. I've already used up all my onions that I've harvested, which is a bummer. But I didn't grow any from seed this year. I kind of cut back on some of the stuff I was growing from seed, which I normally will start onions from seed in the house. And I thought, oh, I'll just buy some onions, start somewhere. Well, no one had any. And I didn't really want to have to order, because when you order them, you get way more than you need.
Right.
So a local place was selling little onion starts. So they were tiny little seedlings. I'm like, and kind of late in the season when I got them, I'm like, well, we'll see. They were Walla Wallas, and I put them in. And they got, some of those got huge. And I think, too, that's because I actually properly fertilized that bed this year, which is, like I said, a kind of a change for me, because I'm not always, it's just one of those things that's easy for me to forget to do, because suddenly you go, oh, I should have fertilized 3 weeks ago or whatever.
The part that hangs me up about fertilizing is there are some calculations on the bag, you know, about square footage or whatever. And that kind of goes out the window with me.
Yeah. I would say that I use that as a very, very, very rough guide. You know, often it comes down to a handful. I'm usually using, you know, an organic fertilizer. So I always figure, you know, if you're using an organic fertilizer, it's kind of hard to, I would say there's a broader range that you can sort of follow before you start messing things up.
So I learned a lot about the fig trees because I did the air root layering, and I got 9 fig plants from, I got 3 new plants from each of the 3 fig trees I have access to. I have 2 in my yard, and my neighbor Jackie's fig tree leans over the fence, and she let me take root cuttings from them. And I just put them in 1 gallon pots, which is a generic term for a black pot you put plants in. And one of them started to turn yellow. The leaves started to turn yellow. And I went on YouTube, and there's a guy called Fig Tree Boss. And it's kind of a weird name, but he's actually a nice guy. And he said, look, the number one email I get is the leaves are turning yellow. What do I do? And I tell him, is it in a pot? And they go, yeah. And he goes, well, you're not fertilizing it. And he just suggested the Osmocote Plus, which you can buy anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually read the instructions, and it said for a 1 gallon pot, I think it's 1 tablespoon sprinkled into the top 2 inches of soil. And I wanted to be careful not to put too much in because I didn't want to burn the roots or put them into overdrive with a bunch of leaf production. I wanted the roots to grow. But like a week later, that plant greened up really quite nicely. So if you read the instructions.
See? There you go. Yeah, right. No, that's a great tip. Speaking of figs, there is an author. He also has a blog called Lee Reich.
Oh, I know him.
And he is a kind of a fig master. And he lives in Zone 5 as well. He's in Central New York State. And he is doing an experiment this year with Chicago Hardy figs in which he's growing them. He's planting them at an angle in the ground, like a very low angle, so that in winter they're essentially going to grow. He's going to train them to grow parallel to the ground, a few inches above the ground. Wow. And he's got a sort of a tent plan to tent to these so that he can try to overwinter these in the ground and actually get, now Chicago Hardy figs, you can overwinter in the ground, but you're going to lose the top growth. So they're going to, you know, you have to start over every year. So, but he came up with sort of a tenting method that involves, you know, some sort of insulation and whatever, where it's basically just a little triangle over the top of it. So I'm kind of following that because that I think would be great. That I would really like, and I have a really good place in my vegetable garden skinny little beds along the side in the ground that would work. So I've been kind of following that experiment of his to see how that works out.
Yeah, I've actually heard him talk at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. It was probably like 10 years ago, but he came out with a book on pruning. And he's a very kind of very, very kind of chill Zen guy.
He is. He's a professor and a soil scientist and, he's all the things. So I like going to him because I know that, he's only talking about stuff that's sort of rooted in fact, which is always nice. He's got books on everything. He's got like probably 6 or 7 books. He does have a book on figs. He does have that great book on pruning, which I also have. He's also kind of a compost maniac. He composts everything, including his old clothing and stuff. So he's not afraid to try anything at all. And I do like following him because he's always, I had a really good conversation with him at one point because I called him. I think I did a story on the blog with him. Must have been what it was. But I was talking to him about composting. And I said, well, what about composting like diseased plants and stuff? I said, do you do that? Because that's kind of one of the rules they always tell you to do is never put like a diseased tomato plant in your compost. He goes, yep. It all goes in there. He said, he goes, if your compost is properly composting, that disease isn't going to be there anymore. I said, well, I don't really have the hottest pile. He goes, well, a hot pile will help you. He goes, but I don't believe you even need that.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm like, well, if it's good enough for him. So I do put all that stuff in the compost now, which is, a lot of people will tell you that's not good. But I'm like, well, if it's good enough for him, I'll give it a shot. I don't pretend to be a great composter, though.
No, but you're better than I am.
Well, I'm an inattentive composter. I have compost bins and I put things in them, but I haven't touched it since spring. So that means that one of the jobs that's lurking for me this fall is to go in there, root through all that, I've got two bins, put all the stuff in one bin, dig the compost because there's finished compost in there, dig the compost out of the bottom, put that in the garden, and then flip that bed over and dig the compost out of the other bin and chop things up and then try to get some semblance of what's supposed to be happening in there because it's a great time to build compost piles because we're about to get a lot of leaves.
Hey, real quick, one easy way to support Garden Fork is if you're going to shop online and use Amazon, please use the link to our storefront. The link is in the show notes here. If you click on that, it'll open it up in your web browser. If you're on a laptop or desktop, it will open it up into your app, ideally, if you're using the Amazon mobile app. Please shop locally. I go to my local hardware store first. If I can't find it there, then I go to the orange or blue store. If I can't find it there, then I order it online. So if you are shopping online, use our Amazon link, amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you.
So what else was a success or a failure in your garden this year?
The string beans always seem to grow. It's the kind of bulletproof,
Mm-hmm.
And the dahlias I actually kind of really relied on to be kind of like the showcase, and that was kind of meh. But my hostas went kind of like crazy this year. And I love the big, I don't know, I call it like an elephant ear hosta, or just these giant hostas. And Fedco has a hosta in their plant listings this fall, which you can get, they'll send it to you next year, that it's evidently the mega giant. They call it they named it after a dinosaur. I think the Stegosaurus hosta, they call it, or something. So I want to try that. But hostas I like because we don't seem to have that big of a slug problem. The deer don't seem to eat them. And I like the ones that are kind of blue green and have like a little dusty kind of thing to them. I sound like a plant person here. But yeah, that worked out really well this year.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's nothing like a really rainy year to discover what hostas really can look like. I think hostas, they survive in our gardens even when things are dry. But when you get a really rainy year, a really wet year, and you look at how much bigger a hosta is that year over a dry year, you're like, oh, you really want a lot of water.
What I also like about the hosta is just there's the variegated ones, which have kind of fun white and light green in that. And it's just, you can also, they're incredibly easy to divide. You just take a sharp, flat shovel and you can take a big hosta and make four of them out of it. Or just, you can carve off a quarter of it, pull that out, put soil back in that hole you just pulled out. And the mother plant is none, it has not been really, it might be hurting in the short run, but it still keeps growing. And then you got another free plant right there and you stick it somewhere else.
Other than the slug problem, and I don't know what's wrong with your deer that they don't eat your hostas, but
yeah.
But you've got special deer and good for you. Other than the deer problem and the slug problem, I would say hostas are probably one of the very easiest plants you can possibly grow.
That's why I grow it.
Just on the dividing thing, this year I was making a little, I kind of extended a bed on a bit of a whim to kind of match something else that I was doing. And I'm like, okay, well, what am I going to do? I got to fill this bed in now. And you know, you do get to a point in the gardening season where you're just sick of spending money on plants. And I kind of looked around the garden and I had this little collection of, it's a hosta that I think is called Teaspoon. It's either Teaspoon or Ann. I don't know. Years ago, I bought all kinds of hostas and I've kind of forgotten what's what now, but there are smaller leaf ones. The leaves are probably only maybe, you know, 2.5 or 3 inches, probably 2.5 inches long. But it's kind of a low growing one. Well, I dug up those and I turned probably 3 clumps of those into filling essentially an entire garden that I also, you know, transplanted some Japanese forest grass into and some European ginger and stuff. But I filled up a garden and it took me an hour. So I created essentially an extension to a garden and filled it up and had a garden that you would never know was brand new in like an hour.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't cost you anything, but
it didn't cost me a penny except for the time. It was, and I tell you what, that is, I always underestimate how satisfying that is to, you know, make plants. It's very satisfying. You don't think about that, but then you kind of look, sit back and you're like, look at how I filled up that garden. I didn't spend a penny. It's a nice feeling.
Well, that's how I feel about the young fig plants I have, because they sell for $50 or $75 at the nurseries.
It's crazy that people charge that much for a fig when you look at what you know, they're not, you know, when you look at what you, how much success you had there and you look into it a little, it's not that difficult to do at all.
No, but, you know, they got to pay the rent there. They got to, I'm blanking here. Anyway, I was going to make a joke about that 1 hour you could listen to Garden Fork Radio while transplanting all those hostas. Yeah.
I do listen to Garden Fork Radio while I'm transplanting things and working in the garden. But the problem is that then I have to stop because, as you well know, I am almost always live texting you my commentary as I listen to the podcast.
I love that. I can't believe Rick said that.
Right. Well, any friend I have who has a podcast, I'm like, I feel bad because they know exactly when I'm listening to it because I just start rattling off text to them and I don't listen to the whole thing and leave all my comments for one well thought out thing. It's just stream of consciousness, send a text off to you to tell you whatever I think about what's happening.
I love it. I actually hear from a number of people that way. So it's kind of fun. It's, I mean, we were talking about numbers at the beginning of the show and the podcast hasn't, it's, I think 600 or 800 people now listen to it. And that's in the bigger picture, not a lot of people, but to me, that's a 600 person auditorium you're speaking in, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's big. And you, Aaron,
the biggest number of people I've ever spoken to is like 450. And I looked out over that crowd and about fell over. So 600 to 800 people, that's a lot.
Yeah. Talking in front of people, I do not have a problem with. It's really easy for me. I just kind of don't care what they think. I just start.
Well, there you go.
So I wanted to move across to, I have forsythia along the front where the yard meets the road. And we have a stone wall there. And the forsythia, it's an old stone wall. It's like when they divided up the land into, they didn't really have dairy up there. They had more sheep up there. But the forsythia is now growing through the stone wall. And I want to plant something else there that looks like a nice kind of visual, like a fence, like a green fence. Because you can, you know, if you look right from the road, you can see in our front yard, which, I, you know, is like, okay, no big deal. But I kind of like plants between me and the road. But the forsythia, I mean, should I try and dig it out of the stone wall, or should I like cut it and put some glycophosphate on the stem ends of it and slowly kill it? Or what are your thoughts?
I worry that if you try to dig it out, you're going to damage that wall more, you know?
Yeah.
So my thought is perhaps something like the second option, some sort of, you know, some sort of cut and brush it with an herbicide type of thing, because I really think that, you know, if you start yanking on things, you could damage that wall far, far more, I would think.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I'll do. It's weird if you let it go 1 year, how nature just takes over.
Yeah. It's always funny to me when you watch these dystopian shows. And they try to show what, you know, what Chicago looks like or whatever in, you know, 25 years down the road after there's been, you know, people, whatever, the aliens have come or whatever. And I look at them like, that is not how things would grow. And like, there's like a tree that looks, you know, some sort of shrub that looks perfect or something. I'm like, oh, no, you should have consulted some plant experts, because that's not what it would look like if everything was left to its own devices for 25 years.
Well, you should put yourself out there as the expert.
Right.
I mean, they have these historical experts, you know, for the shows where they're in Victorian or whatever. So you can be the dystopian plant expert.
Right.
I mean, you're like a line item in a huge budget. So I see.
I wonder if you get a credit, if that's the name in the credit, if you get a credit, and if you do, if you're the dystopian plant expert.
It depends on what you negotiate with them. I have credits in movies, and it just, to me, it doesn't really mean much, but what really
But
means...
you watched the movie and looked for your name, I bet.
No, I actually know it because of IMDb, which is a website that lists movie stars and directors and production people.
Oh, I gotta look you up on IMDb now.
Yeah, I've worked on Woody Allen movies, so that'll show up. But I've worked on a lot of others where I don't show up anywhere because my boss was the... post-production effects supervisor or something like that, and I worked for him, so he got the credit. And I don't blame him. I mean, he's really good at what he does. He's still out there, still working.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's been an interesting life here. Now I have a podcast. Who knew? Well, cool. Aaron and I are going to stick around here for the after show for patrons. If you're interested in becoming part of that, it's through Patreon. And I share a couple, three, five pictures a week, some thoughts, some links to interesting articles or videos. Sometimes I think I'm oversharing, but I'm like, well, this is what you signed up for. So asking for a cup of coffee a month for that. Information about that is in the show notes here. But if you have any thoughts here, I'd like to hear your gardening. What was your garden year like? That would be great. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. Aaron and I are going to stick around, and we'll see you next week. Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. Our executive producer is Jimmy Goose. For more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes, visit hollowbooks.com. The music in the show is licensed from audioblocks.com and uniquetracks.com.